Okay, so I'll be talking about hot and cold spots in electron relaxation time in quasi-one-dimensional organic conductors, the same material that the session is about, and also cuprates because there is some connection. I'll try to speed up to keep us on schedule. The outline of the talk, first part, and the main part of the talk is about these hot spots in quasi-one-dimensional materials. First, I will describe how basically some simple theoretical calculation which shows how some singularities in the distribution of electron scattering rate of the Fermi surface emerge for quasi-one-dimensional conductors. And then I will apply this result to calculate temperature dependence of Hall effect and resistivity in Bechgel salts. And then I will briefly describe how similar but different things, namely cold spots, appear in cuprates. So this is mostly overview of work which was done before, and this is the references. So if you are interested in detail, you can get this because I'll post the talk on the website. Okay, so so let's start with these quasi-one-dimensional materials. And Fermi surface was shown in the previous talks. It consists of two disconnected sheets. So centered around plus and minus kF. So x-axis is along the chains, and y-direction is transferred to the chains. So we can approximate dispersion law in the following way. So this is the longitudinal part of dispersion law. So kF, plus minus kF are two Fermi points, plus and minus kF, and k and energies, they can be linearized in deviation from this Fermi points with plus and minus Fermi velocity. And the transfers dispersion is given by time binding approximation, so TB is tunneling between nearest neighboring chains, so KY is transverse momentum. There is one thing which was not emphasized in previous talks. This material is actually triclinic. So there is no orthogonality between X and Y, so to say, and in fact the crystal structure is also it is triclinic. So because of that, in fact, by symmetry one can write some kind of phase shift here, so that dispersion is not simply ky by ky displaced by some amount which depends on the band structure of the material. Okay, so I'll keep this as a parameter because it's not known very well a priori, so I'll keep it as a parameter in my calculations to see how results depend on this offset. So that's why they are plotted, somehow distorted. Anyway, what we want to do is very simple minor calculation, some sort of textbook calculation in a way. We want to calculate scattering rate or inverse relaxation time of electron with momentum momentum k, and we consider a simple process. So electron with momentum k comes in and scatters on some other electron which has momentum k1, and they scatter into states of momentum k2 and k3. In this case, by the way, a vector. These are two-dimensional vectors in xy plane. And the imaginary part of this diagram gives the scattering rate, which is basically Fermi golden rule. So this is basically analytical expression for this diagram. It basically says that first of all, conservation of momentum has to be satisfied. Second thing, conservation of energy has to be satisfied. And the initial and final states must be populated according to Fermi statistics. So these initial states are populated, and the final states must be empty. Okay, so this is very simple textbook formula. And we want to apply this formula to this kind of dispersion law, to this kind of Fermi surface, quasi-one-dimensional warped Fermi surface. So what do you get in this case? Well, what happens is the following. First of all, integration here is really two-dimensional because third momentum is determined by conservation of momentum. So there is actually two-dimensional, integration of two momenta. And this integration in turn can be separated over, so to say, energy integration. Okay, and this two integration over energy gives nature T squared. So as you would expect, relaxation rate is proportional to square of temperature because it's selection-reaction interaction. However, besides that, here we have two integrals along the Fermi surface. Okay, and those integrals, so there are integrals perpendicular to Fermi surface where energy changes that gives T squared, and there are integrals along the Fermi surface which depend on geometrical shape of the Fermi surface. And those integrals will give us some prefactor here, which generally speaking depends on the initial momentum of electron. So in other words, if electron comes in with momentum at this point on the Fermi surface, I should say that I can parameterize position of my electron on the Fermi surface simply by the transverse momentum. If I specify momentum, then I know where I am, where electron is on the Fermi surface. So that's why I write it as relaxation rate as a function of transverse momentum. It really means as a function of position on the Fermi surface. Okay, so generally speaking, this pre-factor depends on the position of the Fermi surface. There is no general reason why it should be constant along the Fermi surface. And in fact, this factor, as I will show it in more detail on the next slide, it really reflects geometrical properties of the Fermi surface. Because you see, you have to satisfy a number of constraints. First of all, all the conservation laws must be satisfied, momentum and energy. And also, because of the thermal factors, all of the four electrons, I mean, all of these fours of the electron that participate in this collision, all of them must be close to the Fermi surface. Because at low temperature, we know, excitations live in a narrow vicinity of the Fermi surface. And that imposes significant geometrical constraint. It's not easy to satisfy all these requirements, conservation laws, and to sit on the Fermi surface. And all these constraints are reflected in this last factor. I will show this in a moment on the next transparency. I also want to mention that what I actually calculate here, I calculate Umklapp scattering. Umklapp meaning Umklapp in x direction. The motivation basically is, if I want to calculate conductivity along the chains, electrons have to relax momentum. And so that is given by Umklapp process, where two electrons with plus Kf enter, and after scattering, they end up near minus Kf. So two plus electrons scatter into two minus electrons from plus Kf to minus Kf. But I think it's not so terribly important, but just to be precise. Anyway, so let's have a close look on this factor B. Okay. So, the expression for the factor B is given by this integral. So it's a two-dimensional integral, as I said, because there are two momenta, and this integral along the Fermi surface. And here we have some sort of delta function. So delta function of some function f, which is written here. So this delta function reflects those geometrical constraints that I mentioned. And the function f in this case is given by this expression, which has sum of four cosines, so cosine of k, cosine of k1, of k2, and so forth. These four cosines simply reflect the fact that you have four, so let's say, particles participating in this collision, and the shape of the Fermi surface is kind of cosinusoidal, so that's why we have all these cosines. Okay, so basically, and so because of the delta function, the sum of these four cosines must be equal to zero. That is a constraint. Okay, and you have to do two-dimensional integral here. Okay, now, and then if you think about it, you take two-dimensional integral of some sort of constraint of delta function. Where in textbook you encounter this problem? In the equation of Van't Hoff singularities. It's a rather familiar problem. If you have, this is different problem mathematically, there are analogies. If you calculate, if you say plot, for example, say energy dispersion of a two-dimensional material as a function of two momenta, okay, you'll have some energy profile and energy landscape. And if you calculate density of states at a given energy, which means you should put delta function, you know that you might sometimes have Van't Hoff singularities. The density of states would diverge. And that corresponds to energies of saddle points. Basically, saddle points in this energy landscape would give you singularities and density of states. Now, the problem that I'm considering is physically very different. This is not single particle density of states. This is some relaxation rate where two particles go in and two particles go out and so forth. Different physical problem. But mathematics is just exactly the same. So bottom line, to take this integral, what I need to do is to plot this function f, landscape of this function f, is a function of two momenta, k1 and k2, over which I integrate. And this is the plot, this is the contour plot. It has some maxima and minima and some saddle points. Okay? And then I should take the slice of this landscape at zero level, because this is delta function, you know, at zero level. So you take this landscape, I take a slice at zero level. So generally, this slice will not pass through any saddle points assumption, so you get some finite number here. So it will be some sort of a coefficient. Okay, however, the whole function depends on the incoming momentum. You see this k. Remember, we are calculating scattering rate of particle with momentum k. So k has an input parameter. And this landscape actually changes as a function of k. And what happens actually, that you'll see in a moment, that for certain values of k, landscape rearranges so that saddle points get to the zero level, and then they produce, generally logarithmic divergence of this coefficient. So in other words, for certain momentum on the Fermi surface, this geometrical factor may actually diverge. And that's what generates hotspots, okay? And also, and the point on the Fermi surface where this thing diverges, in turn depends on the parameter phi. Parameter phi was this relative shift in the dispersion of electrons, and naturally positions of the hotspots depend how you displace two parts of the Fermi surface relative to each other. Okay, so if I do all this calculation, so let me show you the result. This integral calculated. So this, okay, it's shown here. So it's a little bit busy color, unfortunately. But anyway, let me explain slowly. So what is plotted here is scattering rate. So it's 1 over tau. And scattering rate. As I said, scattering rate has a factor of t squared times some coefficient. And I'm interested in the coefficient, variation of the Fermi surface. So I take out this t squared factor. So in other words, actual 1 over tau is this plot multiplied by t squared. Okay, and then I plot, and gamma is some constant, some density of state or something like this. And I plot this factor as a function of ky. This is transverse momentum, so that is position on the Fermi surface. And here there are several families of the curve for several values of parameters. So the parameter phi, the relative offset, I don't quite know this parameter, so I do it for several, did calculation for several values of parameter. So let's pick up some curve and focus on it. For example, this curve number 2, this family of curves number 2. That corresponds to phase shift of pi over 4. It doesn't matter that much. Okay, and different curves A, B, C, D correspond to different temperatures. So at high enough temperature, well, this coefficient is simply constant around the Fermi surface. And why? Because temperature, this is very high temperature, higher than warping of the Fermi surface. At such a high temperature, warping doesn't matter, everything is mirrored out, so there is no dependence on momentum. But as you decrease temperature, then this warping starts to, you know, starts to play a role, and you will see that, and you will start getting variation of the scattering rate along the Fermi surface. So at a particular point, which is in this case is pi over 4, in fact it is just equal to this value of phi, what you see is that scattering rate becomes strongly enhanced, okay, and this enhancement increases. I mean, this is relative enhancement. It's relative enhancement of scattering rate at this point to background, to scattering rate at all other points. And you see this scattering rate is progressively enhanced at this point as temperature decreases. Now let me show you temperature dependencies of scattering rate at those hot spots. So this is some, so again, the same quantity normalized scattering rate plotted now as a function of inverse temperature. Is it inverse temperature? Yes, inverse temperature, right. So low temperatures are here, right. So low temperatures are here. So this is some generic point where there is no, this outside of hotspot, so it's t squared, so low is t squared here. But if you see that hotspot, then you have logarithmic enhancement of scattering rate at the hot point. In fact, in some cases, you may get even stronger enhancement at logarithm. You may even get some temperature to the one third. That actually comes from the following reason. If you look at those saddle points, in fact, for this particular case, there are actually 3 saddle points, and each one gives logarithm. However, depending on parameter phi, you might get to a situation where the 3 saddle points actually merge and produce a saddle point of higher order. Okay, and because it's in a flatness of higher order, then you have a higher power of temperature as you do this integral. So in this case, it's one third because you have 3 points, 3 gives you 3, so something like that. Okay, so this is kind of, well, okay, so it's nice, you know, so we found some variation of a scattering rate along the Fermi surface. But what are the consequences? How this manifests, for example, in transport or something? It turns out that if you plug this into resistivity, these hotspots don't actually change, don't produce much of the effect. Because the singularity, they're actually integrable. So if you do integral over dk, which you should do, well, these singularities are integrable, they will just some constant. It doesn't matter that much. However, if you look at the whole coefficient, it turns out the Hall coefficient is extremely sensitive to these things. So Hall coefficient is very sensitive to variation of relaxation rate over the Fermi surface. Why is that? Well, there is a formula for the Hall coefficient. Well, we actually will be working at weak magnetic fields. The magnetic field is a realistic magnetic field, but scattering rate is... Anyway, we'll be working the limit when omega c tau is much less than 1, which corresponds to so-called weak magnetic fields. Right, and in this case, there is a formula for the Hall coefficient, Hall conductivity, which was derived by Ong, which basically says that up to some coefficient, which is very well known, actually, it's proportional to the following. What you should do is this. You have a Fermi surface, and position on the Fermi surface is parameterized by kt, this momentum along the Fermi surface. T is not time here. T is tangential. it's position of the Fermi surface. Okay, so for every point of the Fermi surface, you construct the vector, which is the mean free path vector, which is a product of Fermi velocity at this point times relaxation rate at this point. Okay, and then as you go along the Fermi surface, this vector L, of course, changes. So you have a mapping from the momentum space, which is two-dimensional kx, ky, to another two-dimensional space, which is the space of L. L is a vector, has two components. And so it encloses certain it has certain curve, and the curve closes certain area. So then the formula, the Ohm's formula says that the whole conductivity is the area enclosed by this mean free path curve. Okay? Anyway, so this was derived like 10 years ago, so it's a very well-known formula. Now, what is the gist of quasi-one-dimensional conductor? In this case, we can rewrite this formula in the following way. We can write it as integral over ky along the Fermi surface, and here we put y component of L, and this is x component of L. This vector product, we can write it this way. And here we have derivative of d over dky. And now we see the following, that, in fact, if you make some commonly made approximations for quasi-one-dimensional systems, you'll get Hall effect to be zero, because very common approximation is to replace longitudinal velocity on the chain by a constant, which is Fermi velocity, okay, and use some constant relaxation time. In this case, these two things are constant, so derivative is zero, and whole connectivity would be zero. Okay, so to get non-zero value of the whole coefficient, you must take into account then these things actually depend on ky. So there are two contributions to the whole connectivity. One comes from dependence of longitudinal velocity on the position on the Fermi surface, and that can be done, it can be taken, introduced, can be taken into account, and this produces more or less conventional expression for the whole coefficient, which is related to the number of carriers, time, electron charge, and velocity of light. Actually, frankly, there is a dimensionless factor. There is some number which actually comes here, and in fact, the number that depends on curvature, because dependence of velocity on momentum is a curvature. So there is a factor here that reflects curvature, which I didn't write, but which is not very important. It's of the order of one. Anyway, so this gives you some number which is, first of all, temperature independent, basically, and second, this gives you conventional value related for the number of carriers. However, there is a second contribution, which comes from momentum dependence of scattering rate. Okay, and this, in principle, may originate if you have hot spots, because hot spots gives dependence on that, and the derivative would produce some contribution. It turns out that this contribution actually is quite strong, because, well, if you follow all the numbers, it turns out that this derivative comes with some factor, relative factor, which enhances it. Okay, so it's not a small contribution. So, but what you need is momentum dependence of this tau, and that is given by hot spots. But hot spots, remember, develop only at relatively low temperatures. Okay, so remember, at high temperature, there was no variation of scattering rate. So this term would emerge at relatively low temperatures and would give temperature dependence of whole coefficient, right? Okay, so we did this calculation. We took this formula, which was shown on the previous slide, and we did all these integrals. And as I said, we don't know for sure what are these offsets, phi. In fact, phi prime is another parameter. You actually have it is actually necessary to obtain whole coefficient. It's necessary to take into account tunneling between next nearest chains. Remember, there was nearest neighbor in tunneling, but for the whole coefficient, we also must take into account next nearest tunneling, which might also have some offset, some shift of the Fermi surface. So we calculated this curve for different values of the parameters just because we didn't know what the values are. Okay? So these are just some examples. But anyway, but then a couple years later, French group, or RSA group, Jerome's group, they finally published experimental measurements of temperature dependence of whole coefficient in TMPSF PF6. So the points, are the blue points, okay? And when we looked at the data and compared this data with the theoretical curves that we had, we realized that one of the curves, at least, that we had calculated a couple of years before actually looks pretty much like experimental data. So then we superimpose simply experimental points and one of the theoretical curves, and you see there is, you know, quite reasonable agreement. That, you know, doesn't mean anything, you know, this agreement could be coincidence, but nevertheless, it's kind of interesting that it might actually work. These hot spots may be actually useful for calculating something. So this was whole coefficient. And now, what about resistivity itself, rho xx itself? As I said, hot spots don't really contribute much to that. But We nevertheless can calculate in some slightly different framework. Remember that I was using class scattering to obtain longitudinal conductivity, but it is very well known that one-dimensional physics and this bosonization, parquet, and these things, class scattering is very strongly renormalized. In Latissier liquid, has some power law renormalization, which produce some significant temperature dependence of resistivity. Now, this system that we consider is not one-dimensional. It has this warp in Fermi surface, warp Fermi surface. So we cannot use just one-dimensional results. And so what we did, we just took into account spin or pirate renormalization of Umklapp. So this is Umklapp scattering amplitude, and get renormalized because of an RPS style, because of Pirate's channel. Pirate's channel is important because it is spirals in, because spin density wave, one can think of spirals instability, which indeed happens in these materials. So anyway, if you write some simple sort of RPA renormalization of Umklapp scattering, plug this into expression for the resistivity, you can calculate resistivity as a function of temperature. Again, there's too busy curve, too many. There are several curves for different values of parameter phi, which is in this case called 5b. It doesn't really matter. You know, we did some several calculations. But again, Jerome's group, they measured resistivity as a function of temperature. And what is even more important, they adjusted for the thermal expansion. Because theories, as was mentioned in the previous talk, theories calculate resistivity at constant volume, but experimentalists measure at constant pressure. So you have to do this adjustment. So anyway, points are the data from Jerome's group already adjusted for constant volume, and they agree with one of the curves from the previous plot. So again, you know, this simple approach can actually work. Now, I must say that this agreement for the resistivity curve and the whole curve, unfortunately, we are able to obtain for different values of those parameters. So we are not able to get it for the same values of the parameters. So that is a problem. But, you know, at least it gives some indication that this kind of approach might be sensible in general. Yes?
What happens if you plot the transport for the values of the phi you used for the Hall effect?
Okay, let's see, I need to remember. I think we used, let me see, just a second. So for the Hall effect, we used pi over 4 here. Sorry, that's not it. So we used, curve A. So curve A was both phases equal to 0. Okay, so if you go to both phases equal to 0. It would be one of those curves, basically. The problem is the following. This system has spin density wave instability. So at spin density wave instability, resistivity diverges. Okay? And so both theory reproduces this. You know, once you have pirate instability, this channel diverges, so scattering diverges and you have divergence. That's fine. Okay? The real difference is the following. How fast it diverges? What is the fluctuation range? Now, if you have perfect nesting, okay, no offsets whatsoever, then it turns out, I think this is the curve, that this divergence starts at relatively high temperatures. You start seeing this instability at relatively high temperature because you are so well nested that you see this precursor very far away. On the other hand, once you deviate from perfect nesting, or you produce this offset, which keeps nesting but offsets the thing, then this fluctuation range becomes more narrow. For example, this kind of curve, you know, then you have, you know, divergence starts at a very narrow vicinity of the phase transition. So experiment seems to suggest that it starts at relatively, you know, narrow vicinity of TC. But unfortunately, in fact, there was a piece of data here which was published in the paper, and I was never able to actually get this data from Jerome because it was measured by another guy, you know, by another person. So experimental data actually shows upturn here, you see, toward the spin density instability. I was never able to get this data and fit it very well. So, but in any case, the difference really is concerns this region. What happens in the vicinity, how you approach spin density wave, and that is the difference. For the whole, I used very nested picture, but this seemed to suggest not so well nested. Okay. Anyway, so that's all about organic quasi-one-dimensional materials. Now, a few slides about high TC cuprates. Yes, brief. It's just a few minutes. Okay. So anyway, the group at Maryland, Dennis Drew group, they measured AC magnetron. They measured Hall effect. Okay, essentially Hall conductivity as function of frequency in cuprates, And from whole connectivity, you can construct whole tangent and whole coefficient and plot them as a function of frequency. Now, in a simple Drude model, you can do this exercise. What you find is that whole coefficient, okay, must be a constant as a function of both frequency and temperature. In a simple Drude model, the relaxation rate tau cancels out completely. So whole coefficient must be a constant. But the actual data shows strong dependence of whole coefficient frequency and has both real and imaginary part of this. So there was a question how to explain it. There were various models proposed, but model what we proposed was to say, let's assume that we have Fermi surface of coup rate, and there is variation of scattering rate of the Fermi surface. There are some regions where, two type of regions, where relaxation rates have two different values, tau 1 and tau 2. Okay, then the connectivity and whole connectivity will be given by some integrals over the Fermi surface, but they will involve two different values of tau. And it turned out that if we plug in this model and use these parameters, namely relaxation rates and sizes of these regions as fitting parameters, we can actually fit this curve. So the red curve here, the red curve on this plot is a curve calculated using this model. The other curves calculated within other model, Anderson's model, other models, but anyway. But the red curve is calculated, the agreement is pretty good. And the parameters of the model come out is that these regions, there are narrow regions here around the diagonals where relaxation rate is, say, four times longer than relaxation here. So we can call them cold spots. There is not much scattering going on here, but there is a lot of scattering going on there. So again, we come up with a model of strong variation of relaxation rate of the Fermi surface in coup rates, and it seems to agree with the data. But in this case, these are not hot spots, these are cold spots. Okay, but that's a phenomenological model. It was further developed, actually independently developed by Joffe and Millis and van der Marel, and we can discuss why is that, but there is no real calculation, it's a phenomenological model. So anyway, so this is the conclusion that there are many situations where variation of relaxation rate over the Fermi surface is essential, and generally dependence of properties, electron properties along the Fermi surface. And for transport, this is a very important effect that has to be taken into account to describe transport property properly. Thank you.
So I think what we're going to do is we're going to take one question on the talk, and then everybody interested in the break can leave, and everybody interested in discussing organics more can do it over a coffee or do it here.
Questions?
So now it's break time.
Okay.